in partnership, you know, sports or in life in general, it's never going to be 50-50. Like that's not like what a true partnership really is. Like a true partnership will always, like you're there to support one another. So, you know, if someone's having a bad day and they're at like a 30, then okay, you got to step it up to a 70. Like that's what you need to do. If you want to succeed, that is what you need to do. So that is my take on like the partnership and the roles.
Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I am a coach and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. On this episode, I interview Derek Ng. He was the top-ranked men's doubles badminton player in North America, along with partner Adrian Liu, 2014 Pan Am champion, with 39 international podium finishes, now head coach at Bellevue Badminton Club. This, throughout his career, Derek showing a lot of grit, having been self-funded throughout his career, and shows what can happen when you truly believe in yourself and the heights you can reach. Imagine being on pace to attend the Olympics, but then being disqualified on account of a clerical error, and that's what happened to Derek. And we get into that story and the lessons and what he takes from that experience. Just a fascinating story from an elite world-class athlete. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Derek, just to start off, I was wondering if you could just do the 1 minute, just talk about yourself and your career and how you might describe it in your own words.
Okay. So I started playing badminton with my family, my parents, my brother at the tender age of 4 in Vancouver, British Columbia. And from there, we always kind of played for fun. And as I got older, I got a little bit better. And when opportunity came, I had the opportunity to train full-time and to compete for Canada. So I kind of took that as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and kind of quit my career at the time as an apprentice electrician and just kind of ran forward with badminton and never looked back. And now, you know, a pretty successful badminton career in my perspective, and now head coach at Bellevue Badminton Club with around 400 students.
And 400 is a very big club, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So now you've shifted from being an athlete, and then you come towards the end of your athletic career and you move into coaching. Anyone that moves from, you know, the stage from athlete to a coach, it might be similar. You know, for those of us who don't coach a team, it might be similar to, you know, being like a frontline resource to becoming a manager, something like that. It's definitely a shift, a paradigm shift. How did you take, you know, a very successful athletic career into what is now appears to be a very successful coaching career as well?
For me, like shifting to coaching wasn't that difficult. I was actually very happy to be able to be like doing the thing that I love and to be sharing that. I do know that like when I first transitioned, I only wanted to coach like the best athletes. Like, you know, I was like the best athlete. I want to train with I want to coach the best athlete. I want to work with the high performance. But it was actually, when I retired, I actually got offered, a head coaching position at a different club than I used to train. And again, like being open-minded, I just wanted to take it and I just wanted to see if I can run my own program. But it was like being forced to, you know, work with the grassroots and to work with kids that really like where I found my true love for coaching and seeing the effect that I have on the youth and seeing the kids improve, like made me like kind of fall in love with the sport in a different way.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. So that's why, like, for me, retiring and going to coaching, it was a easy transition for me. And I'm very grateful that I was given this opportunity to do what I do.
And you've had some success with coaching some youth, and I'll flash it up on the screen here.
And
you've done very well, and you're so here. You are, you know, a couple of your students who did very well at the U.S. Nationals. So, what are some of the things that, as you were an elite athlete, as you see the next generation, what do you see that kind of sticks out now that you're a coach looking at an athlete? What are some of the things that stick out from, you know, elite athletes coming up through the ranks that you're able to influence?
Yeah, like just looking at this photo, like super proud of my students, since William and Jacob, and like just knowing that, like Jacob is the one on the right or under my left arm, so he is the first U19 boys singles national champion to come out of our club, and the boys singles U19 is like the coveted title that I find most clubs would want to have. And he was the first one ever from our club to win that. And like what made me super proud of Jacob was that same year following up to the Nationals, he was kind of, you know, in a slouch. He wasn't like he kind of not peaked, but like he was just not playing very well. And mentally he was a bit down. And it was like at the junior international trials where he actually didn't do very well. And that's like a big tournament. And there was a lot of pressure on him to do well. And I think like with the mental state that he was in, he just wasn't doing very well at that time. But for him to like mentally pull through and to come back like two, three months later to win the Nationals is huge. And then even like William, the Nationals, like the event that he won, he was down match point in one of the games, and he came back and fought hard. And there was still one shot I will never forget. It was so wild. And there was one shot that was supposed to go out. He was supposed to lose the match, but then the other side kind of accidentally hit it and it made a mistake. And then that was how they were able to stay in the game. And then they came back after that and won.
Those are great stories. And you know, setting records with the club and, you know, maybe carving a niche that hasn't happened through your club before. How do you help your athlete to carve that path when they're the first to do it?
We've had national champions before, but what I'm trying to teach my students is more that grit, because like how I grew up and the path that I went on as a badminton player, it was not easy. I was self-funded for majority of the time, except for like maybe the three years that I had some government funding. And even then, like with some government funding, it's never like it's nowhere near enough to pay for your rent, your food, your training, your travels for like a year. And just knowing like having a goal and believing that no matter like you can achieve it as long as you just really believe in yourself and just like no matter what it takes, you're gonna do it. Like that is the kind of things that I want to teach, because like where my club is located, we are in the nicer area, nicer part of town. Like this is where Microsoft is, and like Medina is just like, you know, that's where Bill Gates lives. Like he's just like just he's like a neighbor. So just knowing that, you know, you just got to put in the hard work, and not everything will come easy, and it's not something that you can just pay to get. Like you got to work hard, and you to kind of like filter out all that outside noise. Don't care about what other people are saying, as long as you truly believe in yourself and truly believe in what you want. Then I strongly believe that anybody can achieve anything that they want. And that is exactly what I'm trying to teach all my students.
That's pretty amazing. And those are great takeaways. And there's a pivotal moment in your career where you faced something pretty serious, and it changed, you know, how things were going at the time with your career. When in 2015, on account of a clerical error with entrance into a tournament, led to a disqualification, and then you lost some funding from a major sponsor, and it affected your track to the Olympics. And at the time, it seemed like you were well on your way, you know, to attending the Olympics. So I'm wondering if you can take us through that in a bit more detail and kind of what that was like and what you learned from it, because it's a very interesting story.
Yeah, what happened was there was a clerical error. They entered us in the wrong tournament, and due to BWF, which is Badminton World Federation's policy or regulation, is if you're entered in the same tournament on the same date, you're disqualified from both. So it was very unfortunate that the tournament that we wanted to sign up for, I believe in September, there was another tournament very in the same location, same country, similar name, but it was on the same date as the Pan Am Games. So they signed up for the wrong one, and even like my partner and I didn't catch it either. And it just got us disqualified from the Pan Am Games, which we won the Pan Am Championships the last 3 years. And we're, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say a shoo-in, but like I was pretty confident that we were going to win the Pan Am Games. And then we got disqualified. So we lost the points that we could have earned, because just how the ranking works, because we won last year. Since we didn't play that tournament, then we lose all the points that we won last year. So we were even like, we had a sponsor, we were training in Indonesia, and our sponsor kind of pulled out. So we have to come back home and train back home again. And we pretty much had to change the whole schedule after that, because the schedules that we wanted to go to, or the tournaments that we wanted to go to, we would no longer qualify because we lost that ranking. We actually dropped quite a bit in the world ranking, which also dropped us kind of out of the Olympic qualification ranking. So pretty much everything kind of fell apart when that happened. But it was at that time we had a decision, like, okay, are we going to keep going for the Olympics? Like, we just lost our sponsor. We lost our ranking. Now we have to make up for the ranking within half a year or something like that. So it was pretty much like, do we continue or do we just keep going?
Yeah.
So at that time, it was just more like let's say within the first week, it was just more like the news contacting us and just people talking to us. And like, we couldn't even have time to really think about what we're going to do, because we were just pretty much doing interviews and stuff like that. And we pretty much decided, like, once everything kind of cooled down, was like, we've already gone this far, and knowing that Olympics wasn't like, it was a goal, but it wasn't the number one on the pedestal goal. That goal was to become the best badminton player that we could be, as in like Adrian and I could be as a team. Like, that was always our goal. So it didn't make sense for us to just stop, because it's going to be a little bit more difficult to qualify for Olympics. So we changed the schedule. We moved back to Canada and started training on our own again. And we did a GoFundMe, which we raised. I can't remember how much we raised, but we were shocked at the support that we got. Because I think we raised like 10,000 to 15,000.
I think it's around that number. Yeah.
Yeah. Which was like, to me, it really touched me because I didn't think that many people care.
Yeah. They did.
And yeah. So that was another like kind of, you know, like a lifter that made it a lot easier for us to continue. But unfortunately, we were still not able to qualify. But then again, like, it wasn't our main goal to qualify for Olympics. Like, we wanted to be respectable players on the international circuit. And I think people saw that. And I think people are proud that we kind of did the best that we could at this given situation. And I'm extremely grateful for the experience, even though it started as a negative. I don't feel any, like, I don't have any negative thoughts on that at all. It was just something that happened, and I'm grateful for the experience.
It seems like you learned a lot from that, and you have a very mature attitude towards that. So that's very interesting. If we learn through, you know, the adversity in our life, seems like that was a formative period for you. So now that you're a coach, you have some interesting insights about plateaus and helping people get over plateaus. And, you know, you have an interesting take on the coach's role with the plateau. And I was wondering if you could take us through that and some of the things that you've done to help your athletes.
So definitely, like, now, like, again, like, going back to that, like, open-mindedness and, it also, like, for me, like, it's really important to not have that ego. Like, I know who I am as an athlete and as a coach. And I know that there's no way, like, even through my experience, like, there's not just one coach that I worked with. And that is how I became very good. Any great athletes, like, anywhere that you look at, like LeBron James or like anybody like that, there's a team behind it. And as a head coach, I understand that if I want the best athletes coming out of my club, I can't just kind of be like the head coach and, you know, micromanage everything coming to me and kind of taking all the credit. Yeah. I need to, you know, see what my athletes need and find the right people to train them. So knowing that I won't be able to give everything that an athlete needs, I will give my everything to the athlete, but my everything will not be everything that they need. Yeah. So it's how do I find what I'm lacking to give to the athlete? So, like, I've been working with the, like, a high performance, like with like Jacob and William, like the national champions, for some time, but then earlier this year in March, I was lucky enough to bring my brother down from Canada as well. And now my brother is coaching for the Bellevue Badminton Club. And he's also former Olympian and has a ton of coaching background. So, like, just being able to bring in my brother so he can work with my athletes as well. And then also integrating another program, a strength and conditioning program from a gym across the street to start doing more strength and conditioning with our athletes. I really think, like, I'm trying to build that team so there's a huge support network for all the athletes. So it's like, we're not just, you know, we're just here to teach you badminton. Like, no, we are here to take you, like, from beginner to top international level.
Very interesting, because you easily could have hung on to the title of head coach and just had everything run through you, but I'm sure your athletes are benefiting from this as a team, as you say.
But I'm sure, like, any head coach of any professional team is not the head coach doing everything. You know, they have trainers, they have PTs, they have like a huge assortment of people working under, and, like, knowing that, like, just again, I think a lot of people get stuck with that ego and like, oh no, you're only going to be working with me, or like, I don't want you like, you know, being going to another coach or stuff like that. I would like love to have my students kind of take in and like, even like for me, sorry, just kind of came to my head. I don't want to be just like if I was a basketball player, let's say, I don't want to be just like Michael Jordan. I want to take what I like about Michael Jordan and use it. And then I want to take what I like about LeBron James and I want to use it. So like as a badminton player, like I like how this player did this in the backcourt, but I really like how this player played in the front court. Like I really like how this person does that. And I just want to be like a complete hybrid of an athlete, taking what I like and what I can do, instead of just trying to be a cookie cutter and like, okay, my idol is this person, I'm just going to be exactly like that person, because that just cannot happen. And just taking that as an athlete and knowing that as a coach, there's no way that someone is going to be exactly like me. I want my students to be able to kind of branch out and discover on their own what will work for them.
You also have an interesting take on teamwork, and that's an interesting answer for teamwork for your students. And you have a very interesting take on teamwork as a partner, because you and Adrian formed a very strong team, a very strong partnership, and you became one of the top teams in the world. So I'm wondering, what elements about that team, about your team, made you successful, even amongst two of you individually as good players? What was the secret sauce to bringing yourselves together to make a very strong duo?
So like with that partnership, I definitely have to credit like another coach, Ronnie. And like what Ronnie would always tell Adrian and I is like, a doubles partnership is like a marriage. And it was pretty much true. Like, we're traveling half the year or more than half the year together. So, you know, we're in the same hotel rooms and we train together. Like we're pretty much always together. And one not being, you know, on each other off court helps a lot. But kind of like understanding what your partner needs in terms of performance, like, and he understands like what I kind of need to do in terms of like how do we perform the best on court, and then we kind of just have to, you know, play around with that. So like I believe like Adrian needed to be very like active before the match. So like before we play a match, like we have our warm-up time, and so we usually come like an hour and a half before our match is scheduled, and then like everyone has their own warm-up routine. So like for myself, I like to, you know, listen to music, and I like to be calm and really go from just 0 to 100 like when I step onto court. Whereas my doubles partner Adrian would like to, you know, hit more and like get really pumped up and even like just kind of get into that like that aggressive zone playing on court like beforehand. Like just we would end up like playing more like aggressive style like box game before our match on court. Now like beforehand, like I never really needed that, and I never wanted to really do that. Like I just wanted to relax, I just wanted to sit, stretch, and then just kind of loosen up a little bit. And but then knowing that like Adrian, like I am Adrian's partner, and if I don't do what he needs to do, like if I don't help him with that, then that is going to affect our partnership on court. So I would have to experiment. Okay, if I tried to do what he needed to do, how is that going to affect my performance? I did, and it didn't, like I didn't feel like it tired me out, and I actually felt pretty good doing his routine. So, you know, even though it's not my number one choice to how to warm up, I made it my number one. Like, I made myself like it. I made myself want to do it because I know that if I do that with him, then on court, we're going to be so much better. Instead of him not having someone to hit with, to warm up with, and then he gets onto court, maybe a little bit sluggish because I wasn't there to warm up with him. So, again, like being that, you know, open-minded and just try things out, like try and experiment. Like, there's a lot of ways to do things and it works for a lot of people and it might not work for a lot of, or for some people. So it's just, you know, being able to, you know, put your ego aside again and to see what your partner needs. And that kind of goes with, you know, normal relationships too. Not just on, like, with sports, just kind of seeing what your partner needs and just try it out. Like, it's not going to hurt you.
You have an interesting insight as well, where you're not describing a partnership and a duo as 50-50. And you have a different take on that. And I was wondering, you know, what that looks like then. If it's not 50-50, what does a good partnership look like?
Look, I do know a lot of the time, like, especially coaching with the students where, like, especially little kids, they, oh, like, you know, my partner wasn't playing well, or, you know, it's my partner's fault and stuff like that. That kind of, like, that mindset of, like, okay, like, if I'm in a partnership, then it's 50-50. Like, I do my half and you do your half. But knowing, like, there's no way someone is ever going to be at 100%, or so the partnership is never going to be 50-50. Like, sometimes, you know, your partner might play really well, but then you might not be playing very well. So then technically your partner is, you know, covering for you and it might be like 60-40. But then, you know, sometimes if they're having a bad day, then you need to step it up. Because you are their partner, and then you need to step it up to kind of cover for where they're not exceeding at. So, I definitely would, you know, want everyone to know, like, if you're in a partnership, you know, sports or in life in general, it's never going to be 50-50. Like, that's not like what a true partnership really is. Like, a true partnership will always, like, you're there to support one another. So, you know, if someone's having a bad day and they're at like a 30, then okay, you got to step it up to a 70. Like, that's what you need to do. If you want to succeed, that is what you need to do. So that is my take on, like, the partnership and the roles.
That's a fascinating take. And you've learned so much through your athletic career and your passing it on to the next generation. Derek, this has been such a pleasure. I wish you all the best in your journey coaching and helping the next generation to succeed with the future world champions. And we wish you all the best on that.
Thank you, Darren.
And that's Derek Ng. What a great interview. So many great insights. And one of them was about teamwork and not 50-50. When your partner is at 30, you have to go to a 70, and it's a give and take. And just, if you saw the initial clip of the duo playing, amazing teamwork, no words exchanged, but covering for each other, and the movement on the court, just really phenomenal. And then the story about being disqualified from the Olympics, you know, on account of a clerical error of all things, but just continued to move forward, didn't play the victim game, didn't blame, just kept moving forward. Just really good, solid stuff. And what was interesting to me is how he liked working with elite athletes, and that was his preference at first. But then in working with the grassroots, he rediscovered his love for badminton. And it reminded me that sometimes talent and potential take time to grow, and that greatness may lie within us, but it helps for someone else to help us to achieve our potential. And Derek had great coaching as a coach himself, and that's a way of things. I have coaches myself, and I also do coaching. I help people get promoted, get faster, get better, get ahead, whether in sport, business, or life. If you'd like to learn more, please drop me a line. I'm at evolutionofleaders.com. If you enjoyed this, please pay it forward, like, subscribe, and share. Thank you so much. Make sure you get 1% better today, wherever and whenever you are. Have a good one.